Hey, everybody, this is Laura Ingram. Thanks for listening to my show and the other great programs carried live on WFYL 1180 AM, broadcasting from the historic Cradle of Liberty area, Valley Forge and Philadelphia.
Working for your liberty right here in Philadelphia. Broadcasting freedom shining right throughout the tri-state area. Streaming freedom shining right from Philly to the nations. Shining forth, we are the
Freedom Station, WFYL. Good morning. And welcome again to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp in studio with my wife, Jean. We're from Brandywine Flags in the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton. And our guest today is retired Lieutenant Colonel Henry Dietering, U.S. Marine Corps. And Hank, welcome to the show.
My pleasure to be here, Michael.
To our listening audience, you may remember Hank's been on several times. And the last time he was here, he did a program on Memorial Day. And what we tried to do in that program was to identify the true meaning of Memorial Day, that it is not a day of celebration, but a day of remembrance. Today is July 4th. Today is the day of celebration. So we wanted to have Hank come back and tell us a little bit about the history of the 4th of July and also the things that we don't really recognize about the 4th and what really happened during that time frame. It's not just a single day that all of the signing and all of the things with the Declaration of Independence occurred, but it was over a period of time. So, Hank, tell us a little bit about the history, if you will, of the 4th.
Well, I think the first thing we need to remember is that this wasn't a unanimous decision. It wasn't an easy decision for the founders of our country. In fact, if it wasn't for Caesar Rodney, who got on a horse as he was literally in his deathbed, or on his deathbed, he got on a horse, and rode from Wilmington to Philadelphia to cast the deciding vote in favor of signing issuing a Declaration of Independence from Great Britain. If Caesar Rodney hadn't made that famous ride of his, which essentially cost him his life, there wouldn't have been a 4th of July, there wouldn't have been a Declaration of Independence, and there might not have been a new country here for another number of years. I think the next thing we need to remember is that the Declaration was approved on the 4th of July, but it certainly wasn't signed right away. Everybody knows John Hancock's signature is big and bold and right in the middle and easy to spot, but not everybody whose names are on there, and there's 56 men who signed the Declaration of Independence, they didn't all sign it the same day. And the reasons were they were moving back and forth between Philadelphia and their homes, and they were trying to avoid capture by the British at the same time. Once the Declaration was approved and the British were aware of it, all of these men's lives were in jeopardy. You know, when you look, 56 men signed the Declaration of Independence. Five of them were captured by the British as traitors, tortured, and they died. 12 had their homes ransacked and burned. 2 lost their sons in the Revolutionary Army, and another had 2 sons captured. 9 of the 56 men fought and died from their wounds or of hardships of the Revolutionary War. When they signed, they pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor. You know, these were pretty special people. 24 of them were lawyers and jurists. 11 were merchants. 9 were farmers and plantation owners, men of means and well-educated. But when they signed the Declaration of Independence, they knew full well that the penalty would be death if they were captured. These men knew that signing this declaration was going to put them in serious harm. Carter Braxton of Virginia, a wealthy planter and trader, saw his ship swept from the seas by the British Navy. He sold his home and his property to raise his debts and pay his debts, but he died in rags. Thomas McKeam was also hounded by the British, was forced to move his family continually. He served in the Congress without pay. His family was kept in hiding. His possessions were taken, and his reward for his actions was poverty. Vandals or soldiers looted the properties of Dillery, Hull, Clymer, Walton, Gwinnett, Hayward, Rutledge, and Milliton. And at the Battle of Yorktown, Thomas Nelson, Jr. noted that the British General Cornwallis had taken over the Nelson home for his headquarters. And Nelson quietly urged George Washington to open fire on his home, which was destroyed. Nelson died bankrupt. Francis Lewis had a home and properties destroyed. The enemy jailed his wife, and she died shortly afterwards. John Hart was driven from his wife's bedside as she was dying, and their 13 children fled for their lives. His fields and his gristmill were laid to waste, and for more than a year he lived in the forests and caves. He returned home to find his wife dead, and his children had vanished. He never saw them again. So as we're celebrating the 4th of July, and it is a celebration, it's the foundation of our country, it marks the beginning of this nation of ours, but I think we need to stop and think about what kind of patriots started this country, what incredible bravery it took, how much they were willing to give up in order for this to happen. And we need to remember, as we did on Memorial Day and we do on Veterans Day, that freedom truly isn't free. What these men did when they served their country is really a big difference from what we're used to today. And I think the tendency is to think of the people who were in that original Congress in Philadelphia and think of the people who are in Congress today and somehow think that they were a lot alike, when in fact I think the differences are very marked.
You're absolutely right that we look at this as being some kind of a sterile environment, that everything was perfect and these men were well-dressed and they would walk in and they would sign these documents and this was some kind of a celebratory time, when it was not. This was a difficult time, and not all persons in the country were in favor of this, so that they were being opposed by some of the people living here in the new world, but also significantly by all the British. So we look at we don't think of it as a time of difficulty and the sacrifices that were made for our benefit. And we hold these men in high esteem, but we don't really recognize what they went through and what their commitment was.
I would assume that they are probably all rolling over in their graves when they see what has happened to the country today. I mean, there's no respect for anything. And in fact, the current administration is trying to erase the history, our history as it actually happened, and change it.
Yeah, the revisionist history is incredible. And for whatever reason, these things are not taught in the school because they're not looked at as being very favorable as far as the commitments that were made by these individuals. And I totally don't understand how we've lost our way as far as teaching the truth about these men. They committed everything, their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor, everything they put on the line. And as you mentioned, you know, the Congress of today, the government of today, you know, these men came into the Congress, they left their homes, they served for a period of time, and then they went back home. Where today is the professional politician, the professional and only the professional that seems to succeed. If you are an individual trying to succeed, you are being sniped at every turn in order to keep this good old boy network alive. So,
you know, it also is interesting that the politicians back in the day came to Congress with everything, and many of them left with nothing. In fact, many of them gave their lives. And today, the congressmen come to Congress with nothing and end up multimillionaires.
Yes, as Hank mentioned earlier in the segment, the 56 signers of the Declaration, all of them met difficult ends to their lives, whether it be bankruptcy or death or torturing, loss of property, loss of their wives, their children, and so forth. So the sacrifice here was very significant, and we have to appreciate that, and I don't think that we do. We look back at this for today. It's a celebration day for us. It's picnics and what have you. But let's look at it that there was a lot that happened here, and the men that went before are the ones that allow us to live the life that we have today. We're going to take a break now. We'll be back on the other side, and we'll continue the conversation.
Hello, this is Paul Fisher, headmaster of Coventry Christian School in Pottstown. I am so pleased that WFYL is a growing part of our community, serving as a voice of reason and a defender of and proponent for all that has made and will make America a great nation. There simply are not enough competing voices and ideas in the media, and we are proud to partner with WFYL in working for your liberty and things that truly matter. Advertising on WFYL has served us well and opened doors of opportunity for expanding our mission in classical Christian education, and the good people at the station have been so kind to help us network as well. I hope you will faithfully tune in to WFYL, share this station with others, and consider how a partnership with your organization or business could strengthen our community and build a stronger America.
Stand in the Gap Weekend with Sam Rohr and Gary Dull of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network features a message from one of the nearly 3,000 church leaders that are members of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network. The mission is to build a permanent network of pastors across the state that are dedicated to affirming the authority of Scripture and taking seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Every day, we're working to impact the nation's values by encouraging pastors to lead their churches in addressing today's toughest issues, including the deterioration of traditional marriage, pornography, sexual permissiveness, and abortion. You're invited to join us in the battle for truth.
Airing Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. and streaming Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. on our website, 1180wfyl.com.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America. You're listening to WFYL 1180, working for your liberty and things that matter. Thanks for listening.
My name is Nancy Becker, and I am your Recorder of Deeds here in Montgomery County. It's very important for the veterans to be aware that they should record their DD-214 or military discharge in the Recorder of Deeds office. This is important because when a veteran passes, the funeral director will usually contact their Recorder of Deeds office so that they can arrange for a military funeral. And this relieves the burden of family members of trying to find this very important document. But the most important reason is that we are now issuing a veteran's photo ID card that entitles the veterans to discounts and incentives from nearly 400 businesses here in Montgomery County. All the veteran has to do is come into the Recorder of Deeds office at 1 Montgomery Plaza in Norristown. Parking is always free for our veterans. You just come into the parking garage and tell them you're a veteran and you can park free of charge. Bring along your DD-214 and a photo ID. We'll issue you the veteran's photo ID, give you a list of the businesses that are participating. It takes about 10-15 minutes at the most, and this way you will be receiving these discounts. The incentive for the business to do this is we advertise your business free of charge. My website gets about 1,000 hits a week, so the potential for over 1,000 people of seeing your business is there. Also, every veteran gets a list of all the businesses participating. They get it when they come into the office, and we email them to them every 3 to 4 weeks so that the veteran is aware of the new businesses we have. Veterans of Montgomery County, please come into our office. It would be my honor to shake your hand and thank you for your service to our country.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again.
just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know my...
Welcome back to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp, in studio with my wife Jean from Brandywine Flags and the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton, along with retired Lieutenant Colonel Henry Dietering, U.S. Marine Corps. And earlier in the segment, we were talking about the kind of the history of the 4th of July and about the founders and what have you. Hank, your comments on some of these things as far as the sacrifice and so forth.
Well, first I want to say that we sort of ended the last segment on a bleak note. I think we need to point out the fact that there still is reason to celebrate the 4th of July. What happened to the people who signed that document is depressing. But what happened as a result of their signing that document is wonderful. It created this country of ours. And it was a couple tough years after they signed it, but the end result was the United States of America. And that is truly reason to be celebrating on the 4th of July. And it's a good reason to have a picnic, watch the fireworks, and enjoy yourself. One of the things that we were talking about at the end was the difference between the people who originally served in our early Continental Congress and the people who serve today. A few years ago, I found a letter written by Don Fetter. And it was a letter that he wrote as if the founding fathers were talking to the current generation of Americans. He said some things I think were pretty interesting, and I'm going to quote from his letter. "We viewed elective office as a sacrifice. For politicians, you politicians is opportunity. We rid America of a monarchy. You established an elected aristocracy. We were farmers, merchants, and professionals who resumed our careers after a brief term of service and never lost touch with our constituents. You were governed by an elite so different from you as to almost constitute a separate species. Your elected rulers hold office for 20 or 30 years, becoming increasingly detached from your roots while rewarding yourselves with lavish involvements and pensions." I think that's kind of what Gene was talking about. People who serve in our government today, it's become a way of life for them as opposed to something that's a small part of their life. And I think that more and more people who are being governed feel that the people who are governing them are totally out of touch with the guys at home. And I agree with that. I think it's sad that what our founding fathers fought for and worked so hard to establish has changed so much from what they originally envisioned, and the way it's being presented to our young people is presented in such a way that they almost look as if there was something wrong with the way the country was founded in the beginning, as opposed to being put in its historical context, understanding what life was like at that time and understanding what the people who were involved were like.
It's also incredible, Hank, that the congressman back in the day would live at their and wherever they lived, you know, from their state or whatever, and come to Washington on different occasions, where the people today, the congressmen, they live in Washington, and they've totally lost touch with their constituents. And it's like, that's true, like this just said, it's like they're living in a different world. And particularly today with the modes of transportation available, airplanes, cars, so forth, trains, they could go back and forth through their districts and keep in touch with their constituents, and they don't do that. They just live in Washington, and it's like they're in this bubble, and they have no clue what's going on in the rest of the country.
Yeah, they almost have taken on an elitist status that we, the people, no longer know anything about anything. We're unable to control our lives, that everything has to be controlled from Washington and only they know best. And the incredible thing is that they'll pass laws that affect us but don't affect them. You look at so many things that they are insider trading. You have Martha Stewart went to jail because she was accused of insider trading, but that's legal in among the government officials, that they are allowed to pursue insider trading opportunities, and they gain significant wealth as a result of that. It's like, why are they different? And that's one of the things that I don't understand. And when we look back at the Founding Fathers, I don't think that they had any intent of this to be the case. You come to Washington, you serve for a period of time, then you go back to your district, you go back to your former life, if you will, which was whether it being a shop owner, a farmer, a jurist, or what have you. So, Hank, I totally agree with what you've said here.
Well, I would say that there's another thing that's changed that is equally important, maybe more important. And it's the kind of thing that creates a discussion that gets a lot of people on the edge of their chair. I heard a report recently by a Harvard professor, and I can't remember his name, but he talked to some of his students who came from foreign countries after teaching them about democracy. And he asked one Chinese man who was going home if there was anything that he found that surprised him about this country. And what surprised the gentleman from China was how important religion was in the functioning of democracy. And the gentleman from China said that it was apparent to him that democracy worked because people in this country had a foundation, a religious foundation, that provided them with a framework, a point of reference that taught them what was right, what was wrong, and that they voluntarily followed the laws most of the time. And that his concern was that as the influence of religion is reduced in our lives, people are going to be less likely to follow the laws and democracy is going to be less likely to work. That was really interesting to me because, again, looking at Don Fetter's letter, one of the things he said was that he was annoyed by the habit of the present-day jurists and legislators of misinterpreting the words of the Constitution. He said, take the First Amendment, where he said, Congress shall make no law, and he quotes, respecting an establishment of religion. He says, you usually neglect the other half of the injunction, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And that's true. How many times have you heard anything about the free exercise of religion? As anyone in the first Congress, which passed the amendment, could have told you, the establishment of religion means an established church, where we're all forced to support the same church. Never intended to create a virtueless republic by prohibiting public expression of faith. In the Declaration of Independence, we acknowledge that the rights are endowed by our Creator. Absent a Creator, there are no inalienable rights. And I think it was George Washington who observed that reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. Today, we exclude religious principle. Anytime somebody mentions the word Jesus Christ, they mention something that has to do with any faith, it becomes cause for concern, cause for reason, people to say, stop, we can't go there. I think we're really missing the boat. There's nothing wrong with people having a religious framework in which they live their life. I personally don't care what a person's religion is, as long as they have a religion that they believe in and it provides a good framework for them. But today, we're saying that, you know, in anything related to government, public education, or children, we're not supposed to discuss or even consider religion. Well, religion is the framework upon which this country was built, and I think that it's provided a good and strong support for all the laws in this country, and without it, we're in danger of people not staying with them.
Actually, you need a virtuous population in order for democracy to work. If you don't have people who choose most of the time to do the right thing, you really have a lot of problems with having a decent civilization.
I agree that we've pretty much lost our way in the fact that no matter what you say, if someone is offended, and I mean, I'm offended oftentimes by what people will say or things that people do, but it's not like I'm going to go out and say, you can no longer do that. I may not agree with you, but at least I will respect the fact that you have the right to think that or to say that, and not to come in and try and change everything because of a single individual or a single group. Tolerance is something that we're supposed to accept, but we have so few people that are tolerant anymore, especially when they have a single point of view and they say, no, we're not going to tolerate your point of view at all.
And then we're supposed to tolerate the intolerable.
Right. And it's like you can't have it both ways. It's kind of crazy that you look at this, that this is not what the founding fathers intended. The intent there was that we live together, having the ability to express ourselves and to live our lives and pursue happiness as we see it. And someone's happiness may offend someone else, and all of a sudden we're saying, well, you're no longer allowed to have that particular point of view, or you're not allowed to display that particular memento or the Ten Commandments or whatever the case may be, which I think is totally against what these 56 men actually had lived for. So we're going to take a break in another second here, and we'll be back on the other side. We'll continue the conversation.
New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say.
Hi, everybody. Phil Valentine here. It's great to be back on the air in Philly, and especially when my show is being broadcast from the Cradle of Liberty, Valley Forge area, home of freedom-loving patriots both in times past and today, right here on WFYL 1180 AM.
One, two, three.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gossett, inviting you to join me for Backstage Jazz. I'll spend an hour each week taking you behind the music and into the lives of America's top jazz musicians. Experience live jazz music and connect with the artists through backstage interviews. Join us right here for this season of Backstage Jazz. Broadcasting Saturday afternoon at 4 and streaming Sunday night at 6 on WFYL.
Driving has a rhythm all its own. Don't wreck it with a text. Before you get behind the wheel, silence your phone. Or better yet, designate a texter. For more text-free driving tips, visit stoptextstopwrecks.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
If you like Car Talk, catch Under the Hood, Saturday and Sunday mornings from 6 to 7. Exclusively streaming on 1180WFYL.com. Worldwide on your computer or mobile device. Stream Under the Hood this Saturday morning from 6 to 7 at 1180WFYL.com or on your favorite mobile device. Go to our website at 1180WFYL.com to find out more.
Friends, Janet Parshall here, host of In the Market with Janet Parshall. I'm excited about partnering with 1180 AM WFYL to bring you a fast-paced conversation every Sunday. As you listen to In the Market, we'll examine major news stories and issues, equipping you to be bold when voicing truth in a confused and chaotic culture. I look forward to engaging my new friends at 1180 AM WFYL every Sunday at 12:05 p.m. on In the Market.
Hey, everybody, this is Laura Ingram. Thanks for listening to my show and the other great programs carried live on WFYL 1180 AM, broadcasting from the historic Cradle of Liberty area, Valley Forge and Philadelphia.
My country, tis of the sweet land of liberty, of
Welcome back to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp in studio with my wife, Jean. We're from Brandywine Flags and the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton, along with retired Lieutenant Colonel Henry Dietering, U.S. Marine Corps. And, Hank, we were talking in the previous segment about the various sacrifices and what have you, and how that has all changed in the context of our government. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I think one of the biggest changes is that, as Benjamin Franklin said, we gave you a republic. And after he said that, he said, if you can keep it. It would appear that we haven't done a very good job of keeping our republic, and now we have a democracy. And I don't think most people understand the difference between the two. When this country was founded, it was founded on the idea of preserving and protecting the rights of the individual, which is something that a republic does for its citizens. The first 10 amendments to our Constitution, those first 10 amendments are restraints on the government, not grants of power to the government. And I think that's interesting. After protecting the rights of the individual, the Constitution protected the rights of states. Today, I think we've turned that around completely. And we think of our country as being a democracy where it's majority rules, which is very different from a republic where the government's job is to protect the rights of the individual. The rights of the individual can be lost if five out of 51 out of 100 people vote to take somebody's rights away. The democracy can take them away. And I think more and more we see that happening today. More and more we're being told how we're going to live our lives and how the government's going to tell us to live our life and what we must do with it. And I think that's really created a fundamental change in the way this country operates. And I think it's led to a lot of the things we talked about earlier, where we now have a professional class of politicians who direct what goes on, and most of what the government does perpetuates itself as opposed to looking out for the rights of the individuals who live here.
Totally agree with that, that it is totally upside down compared to what the founding fathers had wanted with this experiment. And this is the greatest experiment the world has ever known, really, and it succeeded. And now it's as if we're now putting that in jeopardy only because we're no longer allowing the individuals to make the decisions. We're not allowing the individual person to make a decision. We're told how much soda we can buy, how much fat we can consume. There's nothing left to the individual as far as making the decision. That the decisions are being made for us by someone else, and they think that they know better, which is totally against what the founding fathers had wanted. And as you said about states' rights, where you had commented at the break that what works in California doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work in Vermont. And we're trying to do a one-size-fits-all, and that is not working at all.
It seems today that the progressives are trying to change all the things that made this country great, our religious beliefs, our moral standards, and the rights that the people have to live their lives the way they want to. And it's like they want to take away all the good that created this great country and change it into something else, what looks to me like they want it to be communist or like Europe or some of the other countries in the world, as opposed to America. And America is the greatest country in the history of civilization. And they just want to make it, they want us to follow along with other countries like, for instance, Russia or China, who are not doing anywhere nearly as well as we are in a lot of ways. And this is it's just ridiculous.
I remember in the when the administration was running for the first time for election, they said that America is the greatest country the world has ever known, and I want you to vote for me so we can fundamentally change it. It's like, why would you want to change something that was the greatest ever known? We could make changes, but not fundamentally change. And I think that we are going through some fundamental changes right now. And change does not always bring improvement. And I think that that's where we've missed the boat on this, where the founding fathers sacrificed everything for us to live a specific way. And most of it is the we, the people. We, the people, make the decisions. And now we, the people, are looked upon as not being capable of making decisions. And that pretty much drives me crazy.
They've also weakened the military, and they're kind of taking control of our children by brainwashing them through the school systems and the colleges. And our children won't even know what America was in her day. Like that, some of us that are older know we can remember when this country was great, and I believe we can be great again. But they are trying to change our history and change everything so that pretty soon America won't even be recognizable.
Yeah, I think what we need to do is recognize today is the 4th of July. Recognize what this means, the birth of the nation that grew up to be the most powerful nation the world has ever known, and also the greatest nation the world has ever known. You don't see a lot of people trying to leave the country. Mm-hmm. You see all kinds of people from the world trying to come into the country. So we have something here. And what we need to do today is to recognize that and to appreciate it and be thankful in our hearts that there were men in 1776 that actually did commit their lives, their fortune, and their sacred honor to give us what we have today. So, Hank, that falls in pretty much with what you had said also previously, that we need to get back to looking at the Constitution, and the first 10 amendments restricted the role of the government to try and keep it on an even keel with us, we the people.
You know, it is the 4th of July. It's a holiday, and I'd rather talk about things that are lighthearted. So I'm going to give you a lighthearted example from last week when my grandson came to visit. A 25-month-old grandson who came with his mom and his dad to visit us on the farm. First day they were with us, I had a hay wagon that I had emptied the night before, and I needed to take it to my neighbor's. So I took my grandson, put him in my lap, in the tractor, drove the hay wagon to my neighbor's farm, and after we dropped off the hay wagon, I opened the door to the barn and walked my grandson in to see about 150 cows who were all inside the building. Look on his face when I opened that door, and 5 feet away were two cows that stuck their heads up to see who was invading their space, was just phenomenal. And I thought about him sitting on my lap driving home for a little over a mile behind that tractor, having the best time of his life and wanting to ride on our gator every day, sit there in your lap on the front seat. And then it dawned on me that he's going to go back home to Madison, Wisconsin, and his poor father is going to have to strap him into a child seat in the back seat of the car behind the headrest where he can't see forward, can't see what's going on. His poor father is going to have an awful tough time getting that young boy to accept the fact that he's strapped into the back, because that's the law, and that's where it is. And we have to do that. We have so many restrictions on us today, placed on us by the government, who mean well, but they've taken away our ability to do almost anything that we want to, unless it meets somebody else's standard of approval, safety, and it just scares me that our restrictions have come to that point. That's just one that'll make you laugh. There's a whole bunch of others that'll make you cry.
That's true.
I understand exactly what you're saying there, that once you've experienced something, it's difficult to go back and say, well, you can no longer experience that in Madison, Wisconsin, because we don't have a hay wagon out here. You're going to have to be stuck in the back of the car. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back on the other side.
The Apostle Paul wrote in Ephesians 6:10 to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might, so we can stand in the evil day. Let me ask you, are you standing strong in the Lord and in the power of His might? Hello, I'm Sam Rohr, president of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network and the American Pastors Network, agreeing with the Apostle Paul that when the days are evil, we need God's armor. To modern culture, right is wrong and wrong is right. Good is evil and evil is good. The war against God, the truth, and God's people was started by the devil and is in full swing. The Bible tells us that all who will live godly in Christ Jesus will be targeted and will suffer persecution in the spiritual war. So what must we do? Put on the whole armor of God. Imagine, God designed armor to help us in the spiritual battle and available to us. In the next few weeks, we'll look at this armor of God and what it's for and why we'd better put it on. I'm Sam Rohr, president of the American Pastors Network, asking you, did you put on God's armor today? Are you even in the battle?
Sign up as a partner at papastors.net.
Hey, Grandma, can you help me with my Common Core lesson on the Constitution? But the only part we're reading in 8th grade is the preamble and the First Amendment. I wonder when we'll get to study the rest of it. Didn't you say our founding fathers were wise patriots and wrote the Constitution and the Bill of Rights to protect our freedom? This Common Core book we're reading says our founding fathers were racist and they didn't think women or blacks should ever be allowed to vote. She says, we the people, didn't really mean you and me, but some rich white guys. That just makes me feel terrible about our country. We need to change things.
Oh, honey, that's not true at all. Our country is the greatest country the world has ever seen, and our founding fathers worked hard to be fair to everyone. I'm going to call our school board and our state board of education and ask why they allow Common Core and this book in your school.
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. Pennsylvanians Against Common Core brought you this message. Go to nopacommoncore.com or call 484-678-2236.
All right. I know this isn't any fun to talk about, but we should. So, who's going to do what? Flashlights?
Nowhere to be found.
Where to be found? Batteries?
Dead.
Great. Emergency supply kits?
Not packed.
No. What about blankets?
We have an old towel.
Good enough. Cell phones?
May not work.
Emergency water?
Not a drop.
And what about food?
Nope.
Perfect. We all know where we're meeting if we're separated, yeah?
The library.
Aunt Joan's house.
The bus stop.
Great. And I'll be waiting here wondering where you all are. Sounds like we don't have a plan. Who's up for mini golf?
Winging it is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency. Who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see old glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army.
Welcome back to Raise the Standard. I'm Michael Rapp in studio with my wife Jean. We're from Brandywine Flags in the Marchwood Shopping Center in Exton. And our guest today is Lieutenant Colonel Henry Dietering, retired U.S. Marine Corps. And in the last segment, you're right, we were talking about some really bleak situations, and you gave us a really nice story about your grandson. And then during the break, you talked about the restrictions that we now put on to people and to kids, and compared to what we had when we were kids. So share the one with the comparing of the scars.
Mm. Well, Michael, the point I was trying to make was that we have all sorts of restrictions imposed on us by government, all for supposedly for our good, because somebody knows what we need to do. And a lot of them are probably, you know, great ideas. You look at an automobile today and what has to be in that automobile compared to the first automobile I drove when I got my license in 1962. Huge difference. Much better automobile. But we don't have a choice. And I just wonder if having all these choices made for us in life is a good thing. I was telling this story about watching my neighbor's kid come down the hill on his bicycle, wearing a helmet, had on gloves, protectors, and knee pads. I thought to myself, when that kid falls off at the bottom of the hill, what's he going to have to show for it? I suppose he'll be safe and he won't have a concussion, he won't be cut up. But when I was a kid, you used to fall off your bike or something would happen to you, and we'd compare scars. And the first question somebody would ask was, how many stitches? And if the answer was no, I didn't get any stitches, somebody else would say, doesn't count. You know, we were allowed to go out and do silly, stupid things and hurt ourselves, but we had a little bit of personal freedom, and we had to learn to be responsible. Today, people don't have freedoms, and as a result, they're not as responsible as they used to be.
The operative word that you used there was learn. Yeah. We have to learn how to be responsible, and we don't let anybody learn anything anymore. We're going to kind of change the subject here for a minute. Hank is involved in a program that is just unbelievable, and he's going to share some of that with us. And it has to do with a trip down the Colorado River. I mean, talk about something you can celebrate on the 4th of July. Could you imagine doing this in a way to say, hey, we're celebrating the 4th of July. We're celebrating living in the greatest country that the world has ever known. And this is a trip coming up in August. So, Hank, tell us a little bit about this.
Okay. First, I should say that about 6 years ago, I became a member of the board of directors of the Grand Canyon River Runners Association. And that happened because my daughter, who was a Grand Canyon River guide for 10 years, got me working for her company as what they call a swamper, which is an assistant boatman. And I ran a few trips. I wrote a couple articles for the River Runner magazine, which is published twice a year. I sent in some photographs. And I was asked if I would be an advisor to the board of directors. I agreed to do that, and one of the first things I did was created a wildlife census program that allowed people who were going down the river to make observations and record sightings of different mammals or birds or reptiles that are being studied by national park biologists who don't have the budgets to get in the river and observe the animals that they study on a regular basis. Whereas people are going down the river every day making sightings, and if they record any of this data and send it in, it became useful. Well, the next thing that came to my mind happened as a result of being asked to be on a panel up in Deerfield, Massachusetts, after the presentation of a play called Johnny Got His Gun. Johnny Got His Gun was an award-winning play that came out after the First World War. It was essentially a story about the thoughts of a man who was so wounded in the war that he couldn't move his arms or his legs. He was essentially a vegetable, but the play was about the thoughts that went through his mind. And at the end of the play, there was a panel of people, and we were asked, what can we do for our veterans that are coming home today? What can we do to help our returning veterans from the wars today? Well, after being on that panel, it just seemed to me that I needed to actually be doing something myself, not just talking about it, but doing it. So I proposed to the board of directors that we take a group of wounded warriors on a 10-day trip through the Grand Canyon. It's 10 days on the river. You camp out on the side of the river every night. The guides prepare your meals for you. You raft the river, you hike the side canyons. It's an opportunity for people with disabilities to meet all the risks and challenges that very fortunate, normal people face on a daily basis. And having been through the Grand Canyon and having talked to people who have been there, I can tell you that going down the Colorado River through the Grand Canyon is almost a spiritual experience. People refer to it as America's cathedral or as a church without a roof. And it's an uplifting experience. It's really a terrific, life-changing experience for families and for young people. And we thought it would be a good thing to do for veterans. So we decided that we would do this, and we chose to do it first with the Marine Corps. For some strange reason, we chose the Marine Corps. And initially, we wanted to take all active duty people. We've discovered that active duty members of the service who have been wounded have a lot of medical procedures scheduled, which would take priority over them going on the trip. So we've changed our passenger list a little bit. We're also taking medically retired veterans who used to be in the Marine Corps Wounded Warrior Regiment. And we're going to take a total of 22 of these Marines. Two of them will be medical personnel, corpsmen, who volunteered to go on the trip. And it took 2 years to plan this trip. We started in October of 2013. We don't get to go till August of this year. But we did the fundraising, and almost all of our donations came from small civic groups or mostly from private individuals. But as we got closer to the date of the event, we started picking up some sponsorships. The American Legion is sponsoring us through a project they have called Operation Comfort Warriors. They're hosting a dinner the night before we leave. They're hosting a dinner the night we get back and providing for the hotel rooms for these Marines that will be with us one night. We've had nice donations of gear and supplies from a number of commercial companies. And I was fortunate enough to convince a doctor by the name of Bill Krissoff to join us on the trip as our surgeon. Bill's a retired orthopedic surgeon. Bill lost a son who was in the Marine Corps. His son was killed in Fallujah. He actually had two boys in the Marine Corps. When his son was killed, his other one was at OCS. And after that happened, Bill tried to join the Navy. He wanted to be a battalion surgeon. He was told he was too old. But he also had an opportunity to meet President Bush. And President Bush asked him, "Is there anything I can do for you?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm trying to get in the Navy, but they tell me I'm too old. No offense, I'm younger than you." 3 days later, Bill Krissoff was in the Navy. He served in Iraq. He served in Afghanistan. And he's going with us. He rounds out the trip. And we're looking forward to this. We've got a reporter from the American Legion going with us. And I'm hoping that I'll have a chance to come back in September and tell you what it was like to go down through the Grand Canyon with 24... former Marines, 24 truly deserving Americans.
Well, you definitely will be back in September and tell us about this trip. And we thank you so much for being on today. We want to wish everyone a happy 4th of July. Celebrate, go to a parade, decorate your house, have a great picnic, and really enjoy and think about these founding fathers and what they sacrificed so that you could have this day. We'll see you next week. Color red, white, and blue.
My name is Nancy Becker, and I am your Recorder of Deeds here in Montgomery County. It's very important for the veterans to be aware that they should record their DD-214 or military discharge in the Recorder of Deeds office. This is important because when a veteran passes, the funeral director will usually contact their Recorder of Deeds office so that they can arrange for a military funeral. And this relieves the burden of family members of trying to find this very important document. But the most important reason is that we are now issuing a veterans photo ID card that entitles the veterans to discounts and incentives from nearly 400 businesses here in Montgomery County. All the veteran has to do is come into the Recorder of Deeds office at 1 Montgomery Plaza in Norristown. Parking is always free for our veterans. You just come into the parking garage and tell them you're a veteran and you can park free of charge. Bring along your DD-214 and a photo ID. We'll issue you the veteran's photo ID, give you a list of the businesses that are participating. It takes about 10-15 minutes at the most, and this way you will be receiving these discounts. The incentive for the business to do this is we advertise your business free of charge. My website gets about 1,000 hits a week, so the potential for over 1,000 people of seeing your business is there. Also, every veteran gets a list of all the businesses participating. They get it when they come into the office, and we email them to them every 3 to 4 weeks so that the veteran is aware of the new businesses we have. Veterans of Montgomery County, please come into our office. It would be my honor to shake your hand and thank you for your service to our country.